Inspire, educate, connect. This is Yoga Digest, a vibrant community of passionate changemakers.
Hi, I'm Kim Bauman, founder of One Love Movement, a nonprofit dedicated to advancing social justice for kids. I am so excited to bring you a podcast about people amplifying love and humanity out in the world. Please join me as I set out to discover what connects us all as one. Thank you so, so much for listening. Everyone, to a very special episode of One Love Movement podcast where we are recording live from Lake Como, Italy. Today, my guests are two powerful and empowering humans out in the world who stand for people living their truth and for people loving and living joyfully in life. Please welcome Patrick Combs and Eric Lochtefeld. All right, so I wanted to start by, I thought it'd be fun to have each of you introduce each other, not in the way that you've done so far here at the retreat, but in a way where if someone has no idea who you are, what would you tell them about each other? So who wants to go first?
I'll start.
Okay, go ahead. So tell us who this amazing, really funny man is sitting to the right of me.
Well, an epic entrepreneur. With accomplishments that speak to his ability to see something, build it, and make an impact with it. So a man that has an accomplishment trail like nobody's business, but I always introduce him as that, but more so as a guy that walks through the world with this ginormous heart that is seemingly genetically hardwired to want to help. Figure out what is this person's bliss and how do I help them with it. It's an automatic process. It's always existed in my known 20 something years.
I love that. What about you, Eric?
Patrick Combs today is one of the world's greatest storytellers. Not unlike, dare I say, a Paulo Coelho or a Joseph Campbell. However, where he's transforming to and transcending to, in my opinion, is to become one of the 14th enlightened souls in the world. I think he has that potential to join those amazing figures from around the world. If you don't know what that means, type in enlightened people into Google and do some research.
Wow. That's quite a compliment, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, we are broadcasting here live from Lake Como, which is such an amazing, magical space to get to be. And the reason we're here in Lake Como is for a Bliss Champions retreat, and we'll get to that in a moment. So I'm a part of this, I call it a mastermind group because that's what it feels like to me. And it's a group of individuals that have come together who are craving and they're really after a heartfelt connection to their own inner joy. So for me, Patrick and Eric are, they are joy make believers. And that's the reason why, okay, the real reason why I joined is because Patrick said, you should look into this and I'll do whatever Patrick says because he's changed my life that much that I don't need him to tell me why. He just needs to say what to do and I'll sign up. So I signed up without any information. And what I come to find out is I get connected to this man, Eric, and they've really become an advocate for human beings to understand and know your value, your inner value, and what your gift and your offering is to the world. And so that's why we're here in Lake Como. And I wanted to give one of you the opportunity to do a very short, what would you say if someone said, so what is this Bliss Champions thing? What would you say to that?
Go.
If you have a secret or unrealized ambition, we're going to help pull that out of you and for you to step into that this year, now.
And okay. Live it fully expressed. So that you come to this place where you go, I am the fullest expressed me in the most joyful way, and look at what it's doing, it's contributing to the world and mm-hmm. to people.
So is secret such that if you're feeling a sense of wanting more, but you don't know what that more is? Is that what you're speaking to when you say secret?
No. Not for me.
Okay. What's it for you?
I believe that we keep it a secret from ourselves. I don't believe that people don't know. I think their subconscious mind knows all along, and it's our job to help bring that out. We've been lied to about people's bliss. We've been presented with one bliss, and then a month later, a whole other bliss, and then a third bliss comes forward, mm-hmm. the real one. I believe that it's inside everybody, but we have limiting beliefs preventing that from being uttered from our lips.
We do have limiting beliefs. Something that's really fascinating to me is people that I admire, I feel like they don't have limiting beliefs. I know they do, but in my mind, I put them in a separate container almost where, you know, how can Oprah have a bad day? How can you wake up and not feel good about yourself? How can you think, oh, I don't know what to say about to describe what just happened to me, because you're a storyteller. So what is a limited belief that you have, and what do you do when that happens? A fear or a limited belief, kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, my limiting beliefs are in areas that are undeveloped in myself, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a limiting belief around my physicality. You know, I look at people and I think, oh, other people are more capable of having a body like this or having an elite performance at that level. Mm-hmm. They're more something than me. They're more athletic. I'm working in process right now to figure out what kind of beliefs do they have and how do I change from these ones that hold me back mm-hmm. to being more of who I truly am, physically mm-hmm. expressed,
well, okay,
energetically expressed.
Okay, so your limited belief is your physicality, and what would be your fear? What's your fear behind that? What are you afraid of in life?
That I'm not good enough to be the way I see some people physically expressed.
Mm-hmm. See, now this is what's amazing to me. So somebody who I say, if he says, look into this, and I'll just join it because he said it's great. I don't need to know any information because that's who Patrick is to me. And so then I'm hearing him say that he, you know, his fear is that he's not good enough. So I just I love that dynamic in the sense of humanizing everyone. We're all on the same plane. We all have our fears. We all have our obstacles. And okay, so Eric, what is one of your biggest fears that you wrestle with?
Sure. So I create false narratives for myself to protect myself from what I might be fearing. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, I'll be quick to say I'm a really good event producer in the personal development space, mm-hmm. but you won't often find me saying I'm a master coach in the personal development space. I wouldn't even admit to being a coach until we were in month 5. We were in quiet a retreat. And I had a coaching success that was really clear mm-hmm. from a process that I came in saying, I'm going to try this. And then it worked. And I'm like, wow, I didn't just inspire there. I didn't just brainstorm. I know I'm good at those things. Mm-hmm. I actually coached that result. Mm-hmm. And so now as I sit here, my greatest desire is to become a master mentor coach. And so my limiting belief has been that I'm not a coach.
You're not a coach. Okay. Mm. So what do you do when that fear creeps inside your mind? How do you manage the crazy?
I manage up in there.
Yeah, please.
This took me a long time to learn, but for me, what works best now is acknowledging that it's there, and then sitting with it and just being like, mm-hmm. oh wow, look at that. So instead of it being me now, I finally learned that it can be like a cloud. That is there. It's dumping rain. It's thunderstorms and lightning. And it feels terrible while uh-huh. it's there. But I just finally learned it's just a cloud, dude. It's going to pass if you will just sit it out. And then it does and it passes. If I, as long as I don't run in fear from it, it goes so quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's alchemy. That's what alchemists were really expressing mm-hmm. is that you can turn darkness into light. And so it's so wild to me that on the opposite side of fear is always just some kind of internal self-love that returns and says, there's nothing to be afraid of, I got this. And I depend on one other thing with extraordinary certainty. When I'm afraid, it's always because something in me believes that I'm not good enough to do it. And now I know I am good enough to do it because I'm supported by magical forces. We all are. There is a history of people that have come before us who have written it down on pages that are always telling us the same thing about the bliss journey, which is when you go on it, you will be met with magical assistance and support when you really need it. So it's a game changer when you understand it's not you alone. It's you supported by something quite amazing.
So you said a word, bliss journey. I just want to ask a question about that because I don't know if everyone would know what that means. And I, something I know about you, Eric, is that you had, you know, what was your bliss journey to have this idea to even create Bliss Champions?
I ended up in the hospital after buying a mega mansion that society says you've arrived once you get that. And I worked very, very hard for that. Beautiful property. And when we were moving in, it was 90 degrees and I basically collapsed down to my knees. And I didn't know what was wrong with me, but my wife took me to the doctor who then sent me immediately to the hospital. And they did a test on my blood sugar and they can figure out the last 90 days. My blood sugar was 650. So your blood sugar is supposed to be 77 to 99. That's kind of the sweet spot. So I could have dropped dead of a stroke or a heart attack any day. And I was lying in the hospital there. I could have been thinking about, wow, I just bought a vineyard and now I can't drink wine the rest of my life. But I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking, where did I not do the job? The only thing that matters to me, primarily. And I felt that I set out to breed dreamers in a prior career. And I changed a lot of lives for the better. But there weren't enough dreamers. So this time, I said, if I'm going to come back into personal development after being 9 years, I'm going to be all in, fully committed, tying myself to the results. And I'm going to make damn sure that there's transformation. The transformation that, not that I want for somebody, but that they want for themselves. So that's what led to this.
So it's that moment where you were like, oh, I'm unhealthy and I need to shift.
That moment that if this was it and I was fortunate enough to ascend to heaven, I'd have a few people at my funeral and they would all say the same thing, I bet. They'd say, gosh, that guy sure was inspirational. Right? Or maybe he was a good entrepreneur. But at the end of the day, I don't want to be thanked for inspiring you to not do your dreams. So I'd rather have 10 people at my funeral this time saying, that guy got into the ditch with me. He protected my back. And he would go to any length to help you with my dreams. I'd rather have 10 people say that than a million people say I was inspirational. And that's why our retreats are the size they are, because Patrick and I both agree that at a certain point, too big of an audience is just inspiration and entertainment. But this group size of 8, I believe is the perfect group size to have true transformation.
Because when you're in just inspiration with another 20,000 people in the arena with you, what do you take home with you? Like, what are your actions afterwards? That's what I struggle with. I've been to many inspirational things, but then I get home and I go back to my normal life. And I don't know how to insert what I just learned into my daily routines. I don't know how to bring that into that space, so then I lose it. I eventually lose it. What was the, who is the single most person that has impacted and inspired your growth?
Beth Lochtfeld. So Beth Lochtfeld was my first cousin from the East Coast side of the family. Very successful businesswoman, very cultured, had traveled the world, very, very smart, wonderful laugh, very gregarious. And ultimately, she was my bliss champion. So I was 25 years old. I had an idea for a business and a dream. And I was at Gladstone's in Santa Monica over margaritas, and I slid my business plan nervously across, and she opened it, flipped the pages, closed it, and said, "When do you need the check?" And so that was my first time asking for help from really anyone when it came to my career. And 2 days later, FedEx had a check, small check for $25,000, but in 1995, that was a lot of money.
In 2019, and, that's a lot of money.
So she was the first. So that's why I asked for permission from my partner to name this company Bliss Champion, because I actually have a quote on my wall from her that says, "When you surround yourself by a champion, any dream is possible."
So she was your champion.
Yeah, Patrick delivered the word bliss, and I asked for permission for the word champion to join that terrific word that he brought into my life.
And so you, you know, I love that too, because I feel like it's all over in your space where you'll mention her, and I think it's so beautiful how you've carried out her legacy with your work here. It's like a tribute to who she was to you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see her in many things, and I often find myself saying that she would have loved this. She would have loved meeting Diane in particular. I even see a little bit of Beth
in Diane.
Yeah, she has similar hair. She has. They both wear glasses. They're both into the arts. They're both very knowledgeable about amazing things. So ultimately, yeah, she's present for me all the time.
I love that. That's so gorgeous. And, you know, Patrick, I want to go back to dehumanizing you a little bit. Okay, so at one point, I know that your big, crazy, wildest dream was to do a one-man comedy show. And prior to that, you had no self-confidence. You didn't believe in yourself. And I want to know, and I feel like I might be asking for other people. I know for sure that it's, I am not unique in the sense that I struggle with my own sense of self. So how did you get to that point enough where you believed in yourself enough, you had enough sense of self in order to say, okay, I don't think I'm funny, other people don't think I'm funny, but my passion is to deliver this one-man show, one-man comedy show.
Yeah.
Like, what's that? What is that?
How do you get across that?
Yeah, what was
that
moment?
Well, I love what you said, Kim, because to me it's the first most important part is a lot of us, and this has been my path through life, don't have total belief or a massive belief in themselves when they're looking to do something that they think would be amazing. But you have this choice where you can either sell out to what you can believe in, which in my case would be I could believe in trailer houses and McDonald's and grocery stores and millwork because that's what everybody did where I grew up. But to believe in something like a theater stage, you know, and an audience and a great performance, it was just like believing that I could get to that galaxy over there. But the greatest lesson I've learned for myself and what helped me was it's not about massive belief in the beginning. It's about just enough belief on one single day, like 4 seconds of courage to take the first step. And so it's not just, so I did on one single day, wake up and apparently have a better breakfast and a better night's sleep after 10 years of being afraid to do it.
So you had this dream for 10 years and you did no action on it.
Too afraid
for 10
years.
Yeah, that's, I mean.
And then when I lined up the 20 seconds of courage, I filled out, I saw in a window that you could do 15 minutes of a story in a dance studio in San Diego with other people that might be dancing. But it was open forum, and I just quickly filled that application before that window of belief closed. And then I got these, like, come on down. It was terrifying. But that got the wheels in motion. Then from then on, you know, I could start building more belief. But my bliss, one of my great bliss heroes is J.K. Rowling. And I'm really fond of telling people that woman had an insanely low level of belief in her ability to be a writer. That woman struggled more than even me to believe that she could be mm-hmm. a writer. Mm-hmm. So if J.K. Rowling could go from so insecure that she would tell nobody through the end of college except mm-hmm. her sister that she dreamed of being a writer, but find enough courage to take a year to write a little book about mm-hmm. a boy wizard, then that shows all of us. Mm-hmm. It just takes just enough belief.
So describe then, like, what... Okay, I love the 4 seconds of a day thing. I mean, I can come up with that myself as far as moving forward. But so what describe what that was like when you're in it for 10 years. Or so after the 10 years, when you decide, okay, I'm going to take advantage of this 4 second window that I see here. So when you get to that point, describe, like, what are you moving through? What's your day like? What is the work that you're doing to get there?
Build up to it?
Yeah, what are you...
Oh, my God, I love the question, because an apex moment in my theater career, mm-hmm. when that thing took off, was I found myself performing 5 nights in Dublin's just incredible Olympia Theater. Mm-hmm. 5 nights, like 800 people a night. This was... And Sinead O'Connor, like one of my favorite musicians, her band was loading out. And so I was in the most unbelievable space. It was just an unimaginable space for me mm-hmm. to be performing in. And I sat in front of the mirror in dressing room B and asked myself, how did I get here? And mm-hmm. the deepest, most truthful answer was, during those 10 years where you were too afraid to take a stage, you kept the spark of that dream alive mm-hmm. by privately writing one story at a time, just trying to do anything you could mm-hmm. to become a storyteller someday. Mm-hmm. Even when it had to be secret, I never let that ember die out. Mm-hmm. And that's what's at risk. If you let the ember die out, if you don't blow on that ember once in a while, you're risking what your soul came here to do. Mm-hmm. And that was my deepest fear and my number one driver mm-hmm. for decades in my life, is I don't want to die having not done what I was here to do. That mm-hmm. terrified me.
So that's the secret ambition you're talking about, right?
Everybody is here.
I'd also like to touch on mm-hmm. the length of time a person mm-hmm. can keep something secret or stay afraid. So you asked me about Beth, mm-hmm. and what your listeners don't know is she became my bliss champion. She also became my best friend. Yes, cousins mm-hmm. can be best friends. We traveled the world together. She was my angel. Mm-hmm. And she was murdered. And all of a sudden, just like that, with a phone call, she's gone forever. And
holy shit.
Ultimately, that happened in 2004. And I shut it down in one particular area. No more bliss champions for me. No more best friends for me. No more mm-hmm. angels for me. And I went 14 years mm-hmm. afraid to have a best friend. Mm-hmm. Just for starters, mm-hmm. let alone a bliss champion.
Right.
And the guy sitting next to me, I don't know who said it first. I really don't remember. But somebody asked somebody to be their best friend. And it happened in December, I know that. And then in January, I think a couple best friends got kicked to the curb to make room for me. There certainly was not a line for me. And I would say the greatest reward of this is that I have a bliss champion now. Mm-hmm. I know I'm a bliss champion for him too. Mm-hmm. And so I'd say... And this isn't me just announcing our brand. Go find yourself your bliss champion. It's really important, because we have too many bullies mm-hmm. in our lives telling us we can't.
Bullies in our head.
That too. So find yourself a bliss champion, irregardless if you do it through our company. Just go find yourself one.
Wow. Oh, my God.
You know, I always liked it. Yeah.
That's nuts.
To me, I always like to remember that but that guy didn't summit Everest himself.
Yeah.
He went up with Tenzing Norgay. And look, I remember uh-huh. his Sherpa's name more than his. He deserves his name remembered too. Sir Edmund Hillary. But he went up with the champion to support him along the way. Mm-hmm. You know, so this notion that we all fall trapped into, which is somehow it's about me doing it alone, that's so John Wayne, it's just so not true.
Yeah.
Go with somebody that cares about you, mm-hmm. that has a little expertise to lend mm-hmm. you.
You know, I love that you said that too, Patrick, because I feel like the number one reason why people are, like, what comes in the face of being in fear is feeling so alone because we can't talk about our secrets, or we're too ashamed or embarrassed to say what we really want in life. And those ways of being, they end up isolating us to where we're left alone. And that's like the worst feeling, is to have an abundant, amazing life around you but still empty inside. And, you know, I want to say a little bit more about that, too, because I just thought of something we talked about the other day, is that when we were talking about, it's more so about, like you don't care how much money you're making, you don't care about this and that, this and that. What matters more is the joy that you're feeling inside. I can't tell you how many magic doorways I've had personally, huge, huge, out of the blue opportunities that people would die for, and the next day I'm depressed. I think I shared one with you. The next day I'm depressed, completely depressed, and it's from that that lack of sense of innerness. And so that's, anyways, I just wanted to add that that's what came up for me, and that's what I love about what we're doing here. So how would you describe, Patrick, how would you describe yourself when you were young? And if you're not sure how to answer that, think about what maybe one of your grade school teachers would say about you. Like, who were you when you were like baby Patrick?
Fun. I was fun and playful because I was in my mid-30s, and my mom once pulled me aside and said, "Patrick, you're too serious. Like, you're losing who you really are. You were always a really fun kid. So don't take life so serious, son."
So my question about that was going to be, and still could be, what did you need to hear at that age? Was it what your mom said? What like in your dream world, when I was that 6 year old, I needed to hear this at that time.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
So okay, so I'll give you an example. So when I was growing up, I was, as you guys know, I was adopted. And I grew up in a very white world, and I was literally like the only Asian person in the white world because I grew up in South Dakota and Wyoming. Can you imagine that? And see, you can't imagine it, right? Am I blowing your mind right now?
Yeah.
And I remember, and I highly, if I'm going to move into like blame territory, which is kind of fun because then I don't have to take as much responsibility. If I move in blame territory, I 100% know that that's where I lost my sense of self, because I was constantly trying to be who I wasn't. I didn't want to be Asian. I didn't want to be short. And all my friends were white, really pretty, blonde hair, really thin and taller. And I wanted to be them so badly. So I completely lost track of who I was. But I didn't even want, I wanted to lose track of who I was because I wanted to be somebody else. But what I wish, when I look back at that kid who was, you know, 6 years through into high school, is I wish that I could have told myself that, like, what a gift you are to be in this world and this space and to be, you know, adopted by this loving family. And, you know, I wish someone would have told me how unique and special I am. And I wish someone would have given me more information that there's more people in the world than just white people. Because when you're young and you haven't done much traveling, you think it's just what you see. So what would you have told your younger self that you needed to hear that would have made it?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's freaking an awesome invitation. I totally appreciate that. Because first of all, I want to acknowledge that my mother was my first bliss champion. Mm-hmm. And she gave me these remarkable messages that live inside me, and I see the long-standing impact. My mother was very, this is a woman of a GED education, you know, raising us in a trailer house on her own as a single parent. Mm-hmm. So I'm often trying to figure out how the heck am I going to buy a Christmas present. But she was so wise in that she would say, boys, do what you love and don't worry about your mistakes. Those were her two primary messages. Do what you love, don't worry about your mistakes. And then she gave one other message that was really interesting to me. She would say, and learn to work with your mind. Mm-hmm. She goes, I work with my back, which is honorable and wonderful, but each generation is supposed to lift the next generation higher. So I want you boys to go much further and higher than I even know how to tell you mm-hmm. how to get there. Mm-hmm. So what she couldn't tell me that I wish she that I would have benefited from mm-hmm. is if someone had really imprinted on me. Although you see trailer houses mm-hmm. and grocery store clerks mm-hmm. and licensed practical nurses who are struggling financially, although that's all you're surrounded to and that's all you're exposed to is mechanics, mm-hmm. you, Patrick, mm-hmm. can go live wild dreams mm-hmm. that are based on your most creative self and your most fun self. Mm-hmm. And you can make a difference.
Mm. And it sometimes takes one person, just like it can take one person to shut you down, too.
So easy.
It was little Eric, yeah.
So easy.
Can someone get some water for them? Sorry. Yeah, just in case you haven't water.
I would define myself as a kid as a dreamer. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is I had four older siblings, and mm-hmm. they all went to the same high school, basically, and it was a sports factory. You know, one of those schools, like modern day, mm-hmm. you know, in SoCal. Always winning the championships. So mm-hmm. I was brought, as a child, I think mm-hmm. it was a form of babysitting, to every varsity game at this high school for a decade.
It probably was a form of babysitting.
So as a child, my heroes weren't Michael Jordan. Uh-huh. They were the stars of this high school.
Yeah.
To this day, I can name them and their numbers, you know. And so I grew up idolizing these folks. And then when I was in my front yard uh-huh. with the basketball hoop in the garage, I was them. I wasn't trying to be Mike. I was trying to be them. And so I had one sole obsession uh-huh. throughout my entire childhood was to be like them. Uh-huh. I was so inspired that till my knuckles were bleeding, I was out playing hoops until mom would force me to come in at 9 at night because the lights went out until I found a way to fix a light to my court. So ultimately, the one thing, though, that I would ask for somebody to tell me along that journey is that there's going to be bullies along mm-hmm. the way mm-hmm. that are going to try to take your dreams away. Fortunately, it happened, and I had the right response, which was, no, you won't take this dream away. And I don't need to tell that whole story now. But I was fortunate to
have
that.
Well, where did that come from? No, you can't take that story away.
Fortunate. So my dream came true. Uh-huh. I was the third sophomore in the history of the school to be pulled up to varsity basketball. And I was a starter.
Wow.
But my junior year, I was the quarterback of the football team. So we went into the playoffs, which meant I came out late for basketball. Mm-hmm. And the coach penalized me by not playing me half the season. I'm on this bench just like, I'm ready to go berserk. Uh-huh. This is my biggest dream, and it's being taken away from me.
Yeah, yeah.
Simply because I was on the football team. Uh-huh. And he told me I wasn't in basketball shape. What he didn't know is I woke up at 5 a.m. every morning. My mom was a grammar school coach. Uh-huh. My dad took me to a gym, and I trained from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every day before school. So that wouldn't happen because I was watching for a decade, and I saw it happen to every other football player. So I did the work.
Wow.
If I hadn't done the work, I might have just taken my beating and waited like everyone else. But I did the work. I was in basketball shape. I was ready to go, and he took my dream from me. So I transferred.
Wow.
My dad was president of the board of directors of the mm-hmm. school, mm-hmm. building a wing for the school, a construction guy. Mm-hmm. All my brothers went there. I'm the quarterback, I'm the point guard, I'm the baseball player, and I transferred. And I transferred to a public school nobody's ever heard of, that had never won a championship. We didn't have banners hanging. Mm-hmm. And ultimately at my new school, that year I ended up finally getting to start and we won the championship. Mm-hmm. But I went to my new school and guess what? We won the same championship.
Oh my God.
So it was the third banner that the school had ever won in any sport in the history
of
the school. And so that taught me at a young age, if you do the work, you're not entitled, but if you do the work, don't let anyone take away your dreams. They're not entitled.
Wow. I can't imagine being that age and saying, I'm not going to school there, mom and dad.
Yeah. How about leaving all your friends? I love my friends in my high school. They weren't the problem. And starting over at another school where everyone's already has their friend bases.
Oh my God, that is crazy bold.
And from a private school to a public school. So there were so many changes that happened. But it rewarded me the rest of my life because I have confidence now. Uh-huh. If someone tries to take away my dream, I have a favorite quote, and it probably comes off one way to certain people until I explain it. Mm-hmm. But everyone tells me I'm wrong, so I must be right. right? Because why trust the 99% of the world that aren't dreamers with your dreams?
Right.
You know something that shocks me about that through our work at Bliss Champions is when we started, I presume that an easy question to help people, to help us help people live their bliss fully expressed, was to say, hey, who's your bliss hero? Like, who you just go, oh, them. Like, I'd love to be. And so in the story Eric just told, to me, a key driver is he had bliss heroes. He had people that he would like them.
Yeah.
And that's when you have one, it's a magnet. And then people can help you go, oh, you want to be like that? You want that ability?
Yeah.
And then you can start to discern how they behave and you can move forward. And they're constant inspiration because they're 20 years ahead of you, right, in their mastery. So one of the ginormous shocks and eye-openers for where we had to get better at assisting people was almost everybody that came through our doors did not have bliss heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So something about the times we're living in has not encouraged people enough to say, find the person in the world that you do idolize for their talent or their ability. Not for their lifestyle, for their talent or ability, and embrace that you do. Embrace that your soul says, yes, like that. I want some of that. You know, give yourself permission to have them. Like, it's somehow it seems like people want to just feel like it's somehow cool to not idolize somebody that you really... Or be afraid to claim
it's
that
like,
you want to be
make
like
it my
them.
Own. Yeah, I'm gonna
maybe
make
it's
it
a
my
fear
own
that you want to claim to be that great at something. Claim that claim that you want to be that great at something. It's joyful to be on the journey to be great at something, and no less.
Let me prove that to you. I'm 48. Uh-huh. I don't consider myself a person with a great memory. I can barely remember college.
Why is that?
Kaz Taylor, number 11. Eric Schoenberg, number 12. You've never heard of these people.
Uh-huh.
Terrence Mullins, number 23. Ralph Roberts, number 24. Pat Giusti, number 40. Those were my bliss heroes. Those were my heroes when I was 8 years old. I know their numbers.
Wow. Have you ever reached out to them today and said,
no.
You're never going to believe it, but...
Yeah. I always have new bliss heroes.
I can say mine now. All right.
Yeah.
Tom Peters, John Leguizamo, Spalding Gray, Josh Schrei, Will Rogers, Carl Sagan. See, those are mine. All right. Jim Carrey. Who's the Italian guy? Roberto Benigni.
Sure.
Like, when you start to really absorb, like, who does catch your, not your mind's attention, who grabs your heart or soul's attention, that's this universe's way of saying, it's one of the primary ways of it saying, that's who you want to become.
You know, it's actually, it's an interview question to get into Bliss Champions, is we ask you to name a bliss hero, and if you can't, well, I'm telling people this now, but you don't get in. You don't get in.
Yeah.
You need to have a bliss hero. So we've said two things here. Find yourself a bliss champion, whether it's us or somebody else in your life. Number two, have bliss heroes.
Yeah.
So.
Have someone that you want to... Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to, you know, like
your version.
You're
gonna,
Whatever in whatever talent, look for talents or abilities that you would dream to have. That you might give half your lifetime to have, because how profoundly joyful that fantasy seems to be.
Yeah, you know, I'll never forget, I love this quote from Jim Carrey. He says, I wish everyone would go out and get rich and famous and see that that's not the answer. And it just, like, really impacted me.
Yeah.
His insight is really remarkable.
And I love that. However, my wife and I have been fortunate enough to have filled up our circumstances cup and it's overflowing. The number one excuse I get, I think because of that, is I have to choose between my bliss and wealth. I hear it all the time and it's the biggest false excuse going. So I always kind of caution with that. I believe that the world will reward you based on your level of expertise.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think that a person becomes an expert by loving what they do,
uh-huh.
right? Where you'll just, like me on that basketball court as an 8-year-old, Mom, I'll come in, I swear, I know it's 10 at night and the moon's out and I can still see the hoop.
Yeah.
Right? So, or Diane's painting, right? Diane's in our audience, in case you're listening at home. She paints and she paints and she paints. So I think ultimately, if you work hard and you love what you do, you'll go on that path of expertise. Mm-hmm. So that's a forgotten piece, is once we let everyone go home from a retreat, what we're looking for is for each of them to go for their excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the world will start to reward you for that. And mm-hmm. sometimes amazingly.
And can, okay, so this is something that I feel like I go, did you have something to say?
Yeah, please, yeah. This world is really moving to a black and white space. And the divider is pretty severe.
Mm-hmm.
If you're good at what you do, you're in trouble. There's not a lot of opportunities, and there are a lot of threats for being good at what you do. If you're excellent at what you do, you're in pretty good, safe territory.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's an entirely different world if you're great at what you do. But that gap is growing. We're moving into a creative economy. We're moving in an economy where who can execute on imagination and actual authentic expression, you know, a bold uniqueness that's been masterfully cultivated,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, we're in a culture that, a world that keeps reshaping itself based on those attributes that mm-hmm. bliss champions end up having.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, the number one thing I want for my kids is do whatever you love, just don't be good at it.
Yeah.
Be great.
And I'm a tough love guy on the whole subject of building uh-huh. wealth. And I'll look someone straight in the eyes. You want to make more money? Be better at what you do.
Yeah.
Get better.
Mm-hmm.
Work at your craft. I meet musicians all the time because mm-hmm. I know I own a theater. And I ask them to rate themselves. And they're not getting very far with their mm-hmm. career. They certainly can't make a living. They have another primary job. And I ask them to rate themselves in their craft. You know what the average answer is? On a scale of 1 to 10, just guess.
4.
8. They give themselves an 8. I don't give Beyonce an 8, and she's the wealthiest singer in the world because she's not the best singer in the world. Can you imagine if Beyonce was the best singer in the world? What would she make, $1 billion a year?
I mean, to each his own, but.
Right. So ultimately, I mean, people that can't make a living that are rating themselves an 8,
uh-huh.
and that means they're not self aware.
Right.
That rating should be a 2 or
I'm a
10.
I'm the best.
Right?
Is, yeah.
So that they have a trajectory that they're trying to get
mm-hmm.
to. So mm-hmm. you have to work very, very hard to be an expert in anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel the world will reward you, just like Beyonce. Have you ever seen the videos of her as a child putting in the work?
Uh-huh.
They're amazing.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but when you put in the work, then... I mean, just the pride that comes with all of that as
yeah.
well. I wanted to ask you this on subject with this. So I this is my personal opinion. I feel that way, way, way more people in the world don't have their one thing than the people that do. And so what do you tell someone who, you know, what if they don't want to be, create their own thing? What if they don't want to do this or don't want to do that? What if they're like, what do you tell someone that may not have a one thing? Because I know I do this myself and I have my one thing. I've had so many people say comments like, oh, you know, I love listening to inspiring podcasts, but then I feel like shit afterwards about what I'm doing because I don't know what I want to be doing. And, you know, I do that too. I had one time, I really admire this, but I had one of my girlfriends, I hadn't talked to him for a very long time. She phoned me after I did this Instagram post and she said, you know, I just want you to know that I'm so proud of you. And I also just want to be really authentic with you and let you know that when you posted what you posted, I immediately felt so envious because I wanted to be where you are, but I just wanted to share that with you because it's nothing but admiration. And I'm just like, oh my God, that's amazing that you said that because I do that too. Like I look at something and I'm like, oh, that, then I feel like I'm going nowhere in my life. So what do you say to somebody who may not have that one thing? Because I don't think it's the majority Or maybe you do. Maybe you do. Erica's giving you
I'm giving you the story. Eye. Yeah. Because I believe you started this entire question with your own limiting belief about that subject.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe the opposite. I believe that everybody has that one thing inside of them. And I have had personal development companies over the last 20 years that have done over $100 million in revenue simply on that belief. And so I don't accept the premise. I don't mind the question, though.
Right.
Ultimately, what I would do with that is I would dismiss that and point that out from a self-awareness standpoint as a limiting belief to begin with, and then start doing the work to unearth that one thing that is inside of that person. It might take time.
Right.
You might have to dig through a lot of stuff. You might have to bring a psychologist in, like we have at our retreats.
Yeah.
And ultimately, though, I do believe that it's there, and I think Patrick does too.
Yeah, you know, to me, you know, a metaphoric solution comes to mind, which speaks to the same thing his, which is show me the person that, you know, and I've been having this conversation for 25 years with people from stages and stuff, which is, you know, follow your passion, live your bliss, right? Do what you love. And I know that the majority of people sit in audiences and go, oh, what is it? I don't know what mine is. But I do know that metaphorically, if I said, oh, well, I'll help you discover it, we'll know it within maybe by the end of the day or by tomorrow, possibly a week, if I could just follow you around through your day. Because I'd know what we're looking for. We're just looking for where you get excited.
Yeah. The tone of somebody's voice is a tell. You know how
it
tells?
And their face.
So when someone describes their career in a monotone, they are in the wrong career. When someone describes something with passion and excitement, we just hear that. So we read tells in people, and that's why I actually believe it's inside of everybody. You know, you're very empathetic, much more so than me. So I think that your empathy is allowing them
to lead with that empathy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So so based on what you just said, what I think of that you said yesterday, Patrick, was that anything outside of what you want is fear talking, because fear's only job is to say, what can I tell you today that will have you think you can't do that? Oh, I know what it is. You think you don't have one thing. Is that what you're saying? Fear is saying, oh, you don't have one thing. You're not one of those people.
Even that, and it's easy to find other people that will agree with you. So now you're all of the same belief and value system that, we just don't have that one thing.
Yeah.
You know, we've got Epic Mike here, you know, who is almost fully, totally qualified as what we call people kind of graduates that have been epic on their journey and earned the title of Bliss Champion because he's now a champion of his own bliss and able to champion other people on their bliss. He's one of my favorite humans based on how he's shown up in this program. Mike came to us and said, I don't have anything except that I love to ride my Harley. Do you hear it?
So that's it. That's the bliss.
And now he's building an epic business that will enable him to not only ride Harleys every day, profit from riding Harleys, but serve other people in an epic way by taking them and sharing his particularly unique gifts on a Harley ride.
And
do you hear it, though? Do you hear it? Like, a billion people can line up. I've heard people who line up and say, the only thing I like to do is play video games. Oh, can I introduce you to T-Squared? Who's T-Squared? Oh, he's my buddy. He makes $350,000 a year because Well, it's hard to say he plays video games because he's an athlete at video games now. He's a professional athlete at video games.
Very cool.
He took something he loved.
Yeah, I get it.
It was so easy because when Mike described how he felt, I asked him to describe how he felt when he rode his Harley. He just went on and on and on. It was amazing. And it was just so obvious. So it was just a simple thing like, hey, have you ever considered a career? I didn't know what the career was going to be.
Right.
Just in riding Harleys. And that ultimately led to this. And if you were to ask Mike, does it really matter that you've yet to make a dollar from your new business that we technically haven't actually started yet, right? It's all strategic. Does it matter that you haven't made a dollar yet? Would you give it back if you knew you wouldn't make a dollar from it?
No, I love it too much.
Yeah. It's the discovery of that. So, you know, that's really exciting. So I would encourage you and your friends to find a different way, change your pattern of how you receive inspiration and how you use it. Because I think that it's gotten to a point in personal development where inspiration is not working, and that's a problem. Inspiration needs to work.
There's no action. Yeah.
Because it's become entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't not that. I've shared this story with so many audiences, but to me, it's just the perfect example of how it operates in so many people. I do a talk, and this guy comes up to me afterwards, and he's like, "Can I do a magic trick for you?" I'm like, "Please." He does this extraordinary, amazing magic trick. I'm like, "Oh my God, you're going to be a magician when you leave college." And he's just like, hid those cards as fast as possible and said, "No, I'm going to be an engineer." I'm like, "Oh, you love engineering?" Kind of. My dad said it's a good job. And there it was, just all right there. And I said, but your bliss is in magic, and you're phenomenal. It's turned you into this phenomenal. And you at your best. I mean, I love being entertained by you. You know, follow this. That's where all your rewards and treasures are. They're your greatest adventures and your greatest financial success." And he goes, "Nah, it's just a hobby. I'm not going to be the next David Blaine." That's fear.
Mm.
Somehow society convinced him he can make $45,000 as an engineer, and that's not risky.
Right.
But this magic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because people are taking advice from people that didn't go on the journey themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And those are not good people to choose as your champion.
Those are your bullies, right? Not the playground bully. It's often someone that loves you and they think that you can't do what your dreams are all about. So they don't want your heart to break, so they convince you not to do it.
Yeah.
And we believe them.
Yeah. Well, I remember in the year 2010, I had finished my yoga teacher training in 2009. And back in 2010, it wasn't normal to make a living from teaching yoga. Like, yoga's blown up at this point, but back then it was not. And just people were so baffled that people were confused that I thought I could pay my rent through teaching yoga. So
you're like,
day, it's still paying for all my bills, teaching yoga.
Can I tell you a quick story about one of our staff members?
Yeah.
Her name's Kenzie Monopoly.
Uh-huh.
She runs a company called Spa from Ordinary with their partner, Natalie Edwards. And they've been our staff here for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
There was a moment a year ago at a retreat where they were leading yoga in the morning. But by leading, I mean they had a computer and they were playing Yoga by Adrian, which is a very famous yoga instructor online, right? But the Wi-Fi went out. It was like six guys in Adrian, these two who are just great at yoga. And it went out. And I remember immediately looking to Kenzie, like, "Do something." And I saw what I saw. And Kenzie, I saw her shoulders slump. And I saw her head go down. And then I saw our other friend, Dr. Anthony, big studly stallion guy, shoulders back, jumped up there and took over. And he led this yoga class to completion. And then what I saw was Kenzie's determination rise. And her and Natalie went to India about 6 months later and spent 5 weeks getting yoga instructor from one of the best in the world. And then they came back. And now guess who leads yoga at every Risk for Bliss retreat?
Kenzie and Natalie. Yep.
Right? They did it together. And their skill level's just going through the roof. And the level of confidence, it's like from shoulders down last May to now leading all of us. She's even starting to make videos of her leading instruction.
We're doing yoga on branded Spa for Ordinary yoga mats. Like, everything's just getting more blissful.
I love it.
So I think that's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
What scares you the most?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you willing to take that risk? And then once you take the risk, are you committed enough to fly to India?
Well, and why? See, it's always the same.
Or Lake Como?
But it's always the same stuff. See, and why were we watching Yoga by Adrian?
Right, that was...
Because she had a bliss hero.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So she is now courageously claiming in herself, I want some of that capability. I will give myself a shot at becoming that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the greatest journey you ever go on. I mean, maybe people enter their bliss journey because they think in the end the rewards are going to be the best part. The rewards are remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
But the best part is always ask anybody that's gone on the journey, will go, mm-hmm. no, it was in the becoming mm-hmm. every step of the way. Mm-hmm. Every day that I became a little more of who I dreamed to be was manna from heaven.
Mm-hmm. And it would surprise me in the least if a couple, no pressure on Kenzie, but in a couple of years from now, Adrian's got a competitor. You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And I'm not putting that pressure on Kenzie. She's got a lot of talents, but it just won't. Mm-hmm. It would be not surprising in the least.
It would just make sense. We'd be like, yeah, because we
of
could
course,
see that in
that
you.
That would happen, right? Yeah.
It's so amazing that other people can see in you what you can't see in yourself for a long time, you know?
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be amazing if we were in a world that it was the natural thing was to see yourself how other people see yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes and no.
Yeah, that's true. Yes and no. I think, what time is it? Does anyone know what time it is?
12:30.
Okay, we need to wrap it up. I feel like I have so many other great questions.
You got 15 minutes.
I wanted to, I thought we were ending at 12:30.
No,
okay.
12:45.
Well, you know, I want to ask you one more question each, and then I want to open it up and see if anyone in our audience wants to ask you guys a question. No pressure, you don't have to, but just in case someone does. So.
You're a really, really, really good interviewer.
Oh. Well, thank you.
You're really good.
That's like a dream.
And you have one of the best laughs I've ever
had. They're doing that. All right.
Your ability to just be yourself here is amazing.
Thank you. So I want to know what keeps you guys up at night. It can be something good or something bad, but what are you...
Actually,
that's a great answer.
That's espresso. My answer as well.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I was thinking it was going to be like, that's, oh my God, what are my numbers on my spreadsheet? Or
what does the question mean? Like, the question means, like, if I can't sleep and I'm not caffeinated, why? What am I thinking about? Is that?
Because you answered the way you did. Yes, that's
gratitude,
the question.
Gratitude.
Yeah.
Gratitude.
You're asking the wrong guys this question, because I think the basis of the question is what fears do you have and what anxiety do you have? And I've had anxiety once since I was 12.
Uh-huh.
Because I have found a way to program myself when it comes to fear to evaluate risk. Mm-hmm. And risk has done nothing but benefit me my entire life. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, caffeine too late in the day is the only reason I don't sleep well at night.
Mm-hmm.
All pain and suffering, we know, comes from bringing the past forward
mm-hmm.
or having anxiety about our future. So mm-hmm. neither of us suffers from anxiety about our future. I suffer from bringing my past forward. Patrick has a presence practice that he's really, why I think he can become one of the enlightened people in the world is he's succeeding at eliminating pain and suffering from his life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an amateur, just like everybody else. So, but when it comes to that second source of pain, which mm-hmm. is anxiety about the future, that's not something I really suffer from. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge thing to be proud of. That's something, one of the reasons why I'm here this week is to bust through that. I think too that from the story you told earlier, you learned at a young age, and it sounds like your parents were so good at, I mean, what kind of parents are going to say, okay, you can go to the whatever school you want to when you're in, like most parents would probably not let you do that. They're like, nope, you're going to the school, end of story.
Yeah.
And so I think that's amazing that you had that playground to get to, like, in your thought process, even like a playground of being able to think.
It was a Bliss Champion move.
Like, you
not,
could think
not
for
only,
yourself.
Not only you could transfer high schools, but they had to move. They had to sell their home or move in order for me to be legal to play high school.
And they did that.
They did that. Yes.
What?
That's a Bliss Champion right there.
You're... Holy, you didn't say that. That is...
I don't want the conversation about childhood to get confused, though, with, you know, with the fact that the universe is giving everybody the exact perfect childhood for their exact perfect calling.
Right.
So you're sitting next to someone
so
who his exact perfect setup was to have supportive parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The universe for me, my exact perfect setup was to have a loving parent who was suicidal. I constantly help people tell their own life stories, so I hear their life stories, and all I ever hear are perfect setups, whether they were tragic, whether they were difficult.
Mm-hmm.
People that were told they were would amount to nothing was mm-hmm. the catalyst that once it took hold was the perfect setup for them to be the greatest expression.
Mm-hmm.
Your bliss hero, Oprah, another example mm-hmm. of the perfect setup in childhood
yeah.
to be exactly who she was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we fall into pity parties about our childhood, we just haven't interpreted the story correctly yet.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
But you know, triggers will keep anybody up at night. So
for sure,
I'll stay up at night if I've been triggered earlier in the day for sure, irregardless of how much coffee I've had in it.
Okay, that's okay. So triggers, yes, we
sure.
all have triggers
yeah.
for sure. Those buttons that make us go nuts. So then throughout your lifetime, have you ever sold yourself out?
I came close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I came close once. I had the two careers that I really was enjoying, speaker mm-hmm. and comedic performer.
Mm-hmm.
And then, this opportunity came around to build a personal development company, and be invited in to be the content creator and director.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was thinking about too much at that time, and it was blinding me to some integrity things, which eventually drove me out of the company and
mm-hmm.
I had to walk away from something I loved, was I was really just hooked on the possibility of how much money could be made if I joined with these two guys in that particular business
mm-hmm.
model.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, what I'm very proud of is I stepped into that in my full integrity saying, well, I can make this better by giving my gifts in making the content as great as it possibly can and with as much value. But where I see I sold out was by saying, would I have invented this business model? Can I 100% endorse this business model? Do I think this business is going to be a blessing to everybody that joins it? And I just didn't want to look there deep enough. I was selling out.
Yeah. It's so... I just find little ways where I've sold myself out by just not quite fully wanting to see that, because I know that's going to like shoot me right here. It's just going to feel it in my heart, you know? So I'll look this way a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Easier to look there.
You're right. I know that's happening,
yeah.
But anyway, so what's going on over here?
Yeah.
In 1999, I was coming off a failure, a failed
uh-huh.
startup. And my partner in that failed startup, I believe, is sitting next to me. It lasted all of 3 months. And I was in pain. I
mm-hmm.
had a girlfriend that broke up with me. I had a torn Achilles tendon. I flew down to see Patrick with my last $149 on Southwest Airlines. And all he could do was patch me up and encourage me and send me back home. And so for the first time since I was 22,
uh-huh.
I took my second job interview of my life. I'm a natural born entrepreneur. I have no place being in a job interview. And I did great in those first couple of interviews. This was with a company called Garage.com. They were actually pretty well known in the sponsorship space. And I had a resume a mile long in sponsorship achievements with a Warped Tour and other things I did. And my final interview was with Silicon Valley icon Guy Kawasaki.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into Guy's office and he started to interview me. And in my soul, I knew how to answer the questions the way he wanted me to have this be a layup
mm-hmm.
to be hired. I was overqualified. And he asked me what my dreams were. You had to ask that, didn't you?
So Eric can't lie about his dreams.
I told him my dream was to build this particular company. And I didn't get the job. And I went back home. And I spent 4 hours writing a business plan for a company called University of Dreams. And that company went on to do $100 million. So I saw a Guy Kawasaki in my theater in Redwood City recently. And he was a keynote speaker and he was on his way out. And I stopped him and I thanked him for rejecting me. And then, of course, he got nervous, like, is this some wacko? And I said, thank you. You know, 20 some years ago, I had a final interview with you and you turned me down and I didn't get a job that I was overqualified for. Thank you. And he's like, who are you? And I say, oh, I'm the guy that owns this theater that you just spoke on my stage. So
I love that. Would you have said yes, do you think, back then when you were 22, if he did offer it to you?
Had I said yes, I would have sold out. In all of this.
Okay, so you were planning on saying yes.
My life would have changed tremendously.
You were planning on saying yes, though, right?
So Eric did sell out at a different time in his life, but he doesn't associate it with the language. But yeah. I'm going to let him tell this story because it's really on point for the Bliss Journey. He sold out at a point in his 20s when he started saying, hey, let me be the party king, the party host on a beach. Do you know what I'm saying? Your primal needs?
Yeah.
Manhattan Beach?
Wait, I'm sorry, I was thinking about a different moment.
No, the story that you share in Whiskey is all the time.
There's more than one.
We can't remember.
No. When you're helping us understand, like, hey, for a while there, I turned away from the primary needs, meeting them in a positive way that was generating all this success I enjoyed. And then you started, got a place in Manhattan Beach.
Right.
You started just saying, hey, I can get these same needs met by just making sure everybody here's got tons of liquor. And
yeah. So one of the things we do is we talk about primal needs. And the primal needs, there's four of them. It's certainty, variety, significance, and love and connection. And I moved to LA with nothing but $1,000 in my car and my clothes, totally determined to be a success in the entertainment industry. And I became successful in just 3 years. In the third year, I started the Vans Warped Tour, longest running tour music festival in America, in the history of America. And so ultimately, I was really proud of that. But then it went to my head. And I started meeting those primal needs in negative ways instead of positive ways. I had an entourage of out-of-work actors and actresses that were on my payroll, basically, every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, and Sundays. And I lost myself, and in 3 years, I went from a guy well on his way to being a multimillionaire to losing everything and being $200,000 in debt. So what Patrick's referring to is that was me selling out my inner self, right?
Right,
I was reaching to a point where I sold a company one time that I shouldn't have. That I bought back later. So I was thinking that might be
But the biggest sellout, right, is when we trade progress on something that our soul is calling us to do, you know, our bliss journey, and instead go, hey, why don't I just live on Facebook? It does a lot for me.
Man, if Facebook was there back then, I would have been the shit.
You would have been famous.
I would have been so
famous.
You would have been so jealous of my life.
There's nothing to capture your life back then, huh?
But it's an interesting sellout, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's an interesting sellout.
Well, that's the number one, though, is selling out your insides.
Yeah. Knowing that there's something you kind of feel called to do, but instead, you know what? Life's good. All these people are liking my posts. I got the liquor flowing. I am having fun every weekend.
Yeah.
You want to ask me if I'm happy? Oh, yeah. It was super fun dancing last night. It was super fun. And then here's this thing over here where you're like, you know, you'd love to start that really cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 26 and I had a Mercedes Benz. Of course, it didn't matter. It was used. In my mind, it was like the newest model.
And your friends were like, oh my gosh,
she
has a Mercedes Benz.
Exactly.
Your friends thought you were so cool.
Oh, yeah. We always drove with the windows down and the music up. Because it was important that you knew that was my Mercedes Benz. So, you know, I became a schmuck in about 5 seconds in LA.
I love it.
It took a while to come back and rebuild and lose all those bad attributes that I somehow brought on.
We
got to be careful.
Big black cars, and we got stories how we slept with all the movie stars.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that story. Thanks for reminding me about that story. Does anyone out in our audience have any questions? Anything? Our small audience. All right. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Kim.
Yes, Patrick.
Where's your bliss calling you to? Like, if this just goes, it just, the universe says yes to this and you're doing the work, what do you see?
I see myself hanging out under Oprah's oak tree with her, and I see myself sending a text message to Michelle and saying, are we ready? And she says, yep. And we walk on stage together. That's what I see.
And Kim, what's
And I'm moderating her her interviews for her tours. Michelle, everyone knows Michelle.
Yeah, right?
Of course.
Do I need to say the last name?
And Kim, share with us what your why is that you recently learned.
My why is that I want people to feel that they're worthy of their life, because that's what I want for myself.
Perfect
I want
alignment.
To feel, yeah, I want to feel, thanks to our conversation, Eric, I want to feel that, I mean, something I'm super clear on is the path that I'm on. Super clear, no doubts, 100,000,000% confident on my path. What I'm struggling with is that, like, why am I the person that was given this life? How come it wasn't somebody else that's better or that's, yeah.
And we call those?
We call those fears.
Yep, limiting beliefs, right?
The reasons that everything that comes after your bliss is just fear, yeah, saying, oh, yeah, what can I tell Kim to shut her down today?
Right, and at Bliss Champions, mm-hmm, we'd ask you to write a list of why you, yeah, are that person and why you deserve to be that person.
Yeah.
Like, what's a why? Like, why? What's your why now? Like, why?
Why do I deserve it? Because,
yeah,
I was given this beautiful life, and I was chosen to take on this path, this message of, you know, of awareness and community to, you know, raise money for social justice for kids, and that's my duty in life. So.
Yeah. And yeah. Can I ask another,
yeah,
question?
Yeah.
Are you more of an expert at asking really thought-provoking questions of inspiring people than, say, Rob over there?
No.
Really?
No.
Really? So Rob, who doesn't ever do that, is more talented at asking questions than...
Well, I mean, it's not Rob's calling to do that. So, right, Rob, so, that I know of?
That's correct. But that is my point.
Just like I'm never going to be a physicist,
right,
in my life.
But your empathetic response at first was, no, he has no experience. He doesn't,
right,
even care if
he
I say he's not a good question asker.
Right.
But you just... Your first answer was that he's better. So,
right, I get what you're saying.
Now let me,
yeah,
ask it again. Mm-hmm. Who's the best in this room at asking thought-provoking questions on
podcasts?
I'm the
best in this room.
Right?
Yeah.
Who's the best in the world at that? Who's the bliss hero?
Oprah.
Yeah.
Oprah's my bliss hero.
So here you are. Here, mm-hmm, she is. Enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
And then to me, what I add into it is, who's the best in this room? You. Who desires it for some mysterious reason the most in this room to sit down and do interviews with people?
Me.
Isn't that mysterious and wonderful?
Yeah.
And could it be enough to just go, I don't know why I desire it so much.
Yeah.
But I can acknowledge that I do.
Yeah.
For some reason I do. And what if that seed of desire was implanted in you at birth?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just saying, this is who you are.
Mm-hmm. It was, because, oh, I've always been super curious. Curiosity runs me.
So
sure.
What if you didn't even need to know why you had that desire? The greater need was to acknowledge that it just was.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in some other universe or time frame that we don't understand as humans, the why you were given that task was revealed.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe during this body, you don't need to know why. Mm-hmm. You just need to go, I don't know why I took,
yeah,
this way I do. Because I can't tell you why.
But I'm running with it, yeah.
Yeah, I can't tell you. There's no logical, practical, there's no reason why I desire to go on a stage,
mm-hmm,
and entertain an audience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
You just do.
I just do.
You just have confidence.
As should you. I've been,
yeah,
interviewed dozens of times, not as many as this gentleman over here. But this is the best interview I've ever sat for. So I believe in you. I believe that's a true statement.
Mm-hmm.
And Oprah Winfrey has interviewed in my theater, so I can compare her as an interviewer,
mm-hmm,
to you, having sat 10 feet away from that interview. And I think you have the potential to be the next Oprah.
I don't like to say this sentence out loud, but for your benefit, I will. Uh-huh. I've been interviewed by Barbara Walters. Mm-hmm. You're infinitely better than Barbara Walters.
Yeah, with a way better laugh. Thank you, Kim.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being here. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I appreciate you guys showing up for us today. This is Sarah and Andrew. This is how we're like sending love to people as we, and then we just like place our love on people.
Kim, we're not sending love to people. We're sending love to you right now.
I'm sending it back though. Thank you so much. That was super fun. Yes, thank you. Yes.